Blog Talk Radio.
Oh my gosh, thank you, Debbie Lynn. I have a new song for the spring. You'll have to let us know how you want it. Hey everybody, this is Janine and you're listening to Lunch with Loudon. Coffee Talk radio shows are part of the Coffee Party Be the Media project. You can join our team at www.coffeepartyusa.com/volunteer. We'd love to have you as a part of the Lunch with Loudon Brain Trust, and we would love to have you be a volunteer at Coffee Party USA. So welcome. So Debbie Lynn and I have our hands full today, and it's going to be so much fun. Part of the Coffee Party Be the Media Project is our commitment to help members and supporters be informed about actions and events across America. So Debbie Lynn, are you ready to be informative?
I am so ready to be informative. I thought we'd start the top of the hour really with just some announcements about all the things that are happening on issues that we've been following here on Lunch with Loudon, and then we'll lead into our guest today. So the first thing I want everybody to know about is that the Trans-Pacific Partisan or Trans-Pacific Partnership is going full steam ahead with Obama in Asia right now. And there's a petition that you can go online and sign at stopthesecrecy.net, that's stopthesecrecy.net. They're collecting signatures through April 30th, and then they have an event in Washington, D.C. on May 7th. So make sure to check that one out. Next up, there's the March Against Monsanto. This is a global event that's happening on May 24th. And you can find that on Facebook on the March Against Monsanto and find something local in your area. Or if you want to do it on the website, march-against-monsanto.com. The third thing I want to point out is the FCC just this morning, the chief of the FCC, I should say, came out with new guidelines that appears to be favoring a bundled internet or a tiered internet service rather than net neutrality. And so there's a petition that you can sign right now at freepress.net/action. And they also have a way that you can actually call the FCC to deliver a message directly to them. Then just a couple of other things is that we are looking at, there's a rural organizing project strategy and caucus session on May 3rd and a training the following day on Sunday, May 4th in Hood River, Oregon. And this is for training activists in civil disobedience. So if that's something you can check that one out at ROP.org, ROP for Rural Organizing Project. And then Wellstone has also is having an event in Rhode Island, but you can check out their, they have also trainings. These are trainings and events coming up all across the country, and you can check that out at wellstone.org. And so I just want to say if you have actions that you would like to promote, give us a call today at 646-929-2495 or post them on the Lunch with Loudon Facebook page. We'll pick them up and get them in here. And then I saved the last one for our guest today, and that's we have the United We Stand Fest. It's going to be at UCLA on May 10th, and we've got a couple of great people today to talk about that.
Excellent segue, Debbie Lynn. Debbie Lynn, of course, is up in Portlandia, Oregon. I'm Janine Loudon. I'm here in Corvallis. And today we're going to be speaking with Bobby Rodrigo and with Dan Johnson. Bobby Rodrigo is a national organizer for PANDA, People Against the National Defense Authorization Act, and marketing director for Free and Equal Elections Foundation. Both organizations have major grassroots events coming up, the PANDA Take Back Tour, activist concerts in Georgia, New York, Michigan, and California, and the United We Stand Fest in UCLA. Also joining our conversation will be Dan Johnson, who founded PANDA in order to fight provisions 1020 and 1022 in the National Defense Authorization Act, which constitutionally authorized the use of military force on U.S. soil and U.S. citizens, including detention, extraordinary rendition and extrajudicial execution. So I first got to know Freedom Equal Foundation when they sponsored the alternative presidential debate, and of course PANDA is relatively new on the scene in response to the NDAA. So Bobby, welcome to Lunch with Loudon. Oh, apparently not open. Bobby, are you with me?
I was talking to myself just fine. Good afternoon, ladies. Nice to be here, and how is everybody today?
Well, we're great.
It's been so long since we talked.
It's true. We get to speak to each other once in a while, don't we? So you can straighten me out if I'm wrong, but I tried to get the cosmology of our call today together. So the Free and Equal Foundation is the parent organization of the United We Stand Festival, of which PANDA is a sponsor, and at which Dane Johnson will be a speaker. Have I got it straight so far?
That is correct. That is correct.
Excellent.
Yes.
And so, and then PANDA is following suit with the Take Back Tour in several cities across America. So I don't know if you and Dan would like to chime back and forth, or if you'd just sort of like to give me some of the basics about what you're up to with the United We Stand Festival.
Well, certainly, I'd be happy to, and then Dan will absolutely be speaking on it as well. It's a very important event. One of the things that's so important about it, well, first of all props for the United We Stand Festival needs to go to the founder and president of Free and Equal, Christina Tobin. She is the brainchild behind it, the energy behind the organization and the event. The platform was created by her, developed by her. Her background is she comes from, well, her father ran for election on an alternative ticket in Illinois. She worked for the Ralph Nader campaign and was able to get his name on the ballot, I believe, in 45 states. But Free and Equal, when she created Free and Equal, it was directly responsible and sponsored, hosted, created the third-party debates. And it actually really wasn't the third-party debates until the president and the governor declined to participate. So that became alternative, because actually they were also invited to be a part of it, and there should have been six candidates on the stage instead of four. Be that as it may, Larry King and Christina Tobin was moderating. It was broadcast to over 20 million people. Green Party, Constitutional Party, Justice Party, and Libertarian Party were represented by their presidential candidates. They also did the vice presidential candidates as well for those parties. What Christina has done is she has brought the United We Stand Fest and created a coalition, a marvelous coalition. Anybody who's worth anything is sponsoring the event, or is involved in the event. The list of speakers, organizations, and musicians that are involved is endless. Alternative media people like Amber Lyon, who has won 3 Emmys, for example. Ben Swan are going to be there. We Are Change is going to be moderating a roundtable there. Public Enemy, Immortal Technique, the members of the Wu-Tang Clan, and a number of musicians are going to be there. Some surprise guests are also slated to show up. The artists are not complete yet if she gets her wishes, which she has a very aggressive, wonderful list of people. And then, of course, Gary Johnson's going to be there, Jill Stein's going to be there, which in itself shows the reach of her organization, because, of course, that is the Green Party and the Libertarian Party, and their platforms are very different. So in that regard, it shows the work that she's done. It's at UCLA. It's in Pauley Pavilion. The venue holds 10,000 people. So we're looking to be part of a marvelous thing, and PANDA and Dan Johnson has been involved with supporting that event since it was created at the beginning of last year. So that's just a little background on United We Stand Fest, and I, of course, invite everybody to go to it, support it. The ticket price is interesting. It's $17.76 is the ticket price. I thought that was wonderful. You're going to be blown away. The founder, you mentioned the March Against Monsanto, which I'm the head of security for the March Against Monsanto Atlanta group. Well, Tammy Cannell is going to be one of the speakers at the event. She founded the March Against Monsanto, and she's going to be at the United We Stand Fest. So, again, it just shows the reach of what she has done for this event, and everybody should go freeandequal.org, theunitedwestandfest.com. I welcome everybody to see, support. If you can't go, donate to the cause. It is a grassroots organization, a 501c3. There's no big money behind it. It's all about the donations from the people who support it. And, of course, we appreciate Coffee Party giving us the time to talk about it as well.
Excellent, excellent. Well, how about I open Dan's mic, and he can talk to us a little bit about the same thing, and then we can exchange information. Dan, welcome to Lunch with Loudon.
Thank you so much for having me back on.
Yes, yes. We had a great time last time. So it sounds like it's the United We Stand Festival is happening on May 10th. And then shortly thereafter, there's going to be a panda tour, take back town tour across America. So did one of you inspire the other? Is this a collaboration? How did this come to be?
These are actually two separate events that came out of kind of the same concept, which is the need to educate the populace through music. Neither event necessarily inspired the other. A way to educate the populace, especially my generation, as many of your listeners know, I'm only 20 years old. So especially my generation, about the NDAA and the dangers of indefinite military detention, because changing the law only does so much. We have an administration today that, just like the Bush administration before it, has no regard for what the text of the law says on almost any issue. So we have a need to not only change the law, but to change the culture. And I think that's where our idea, at least for the Take Back Tour, came from. Their idea as far as music and bringing people together, a little bit different. But the talking about the United We Stand Fest first, Bobby's right, and Christina Tobin has done an excellent job putting this together and bringing the who's who of anybody who cares about liberty on board with this. And at this United We Stand Fest, the goal is to expose the two-party system for what it is, which, as John Adams put it, is the greatest political evil under our Constitution, and encourage young people, encourage people of different party backgrounds to run for office on an independent ticket. And I think that that goal is very, very noble, because it challenges an existing power structure that really bringing people together to challenge any existing power structure tends to be corrupt. So especially a power structure that's been around for several hundred years, bringing people together to challenge that, I think, is an amazing idea, and that's why we're co-sponsoring the United We Stand Fest out at UCLA on the 10th.
Oh, that's brilliant. A couple of things come to mind. Whiteout had this to say about the fest. Said, the real battle lines aren't conservatives versus liberals. The real fight is the establishment versus the people. And the speakers mm-hmm. and leaders lined up for United We Stand are some of the best we the people we have. I thought that was high praise.
And I just want to point in here, Dan is in the chat room, our Press One for Democracy host, and he put in a poll from Rasmussen that shows that 53% of Americans feel that the Democrats and the Republicans do not represent the American people. So there's definitely lots of room out there for new people to get in the race.
And one of the things that they're doing with the festival, too, is pointing out, you know, is election corruption. It's beyond the voter aspect of it, and we talk about this all the time, all of us do, in our various forums. And one of the candidates, one of the people who are speaking, Marianne Williamson, is running on the independent ticket in California, for example, for the House of Representatives. So absolutely, and Dan had pointed this out the other night. It was on his show, as a matter of fact, a great point on how America knows that it doesn't really matter which one of them is up there. They're pretty much doing the same thing. And the Coffee Party, of course, knows it because of their stance about the fact that our government is bought. It isn't like that they're pointing out one party or the other. It's both of the parties that are bought. We all know that.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely. And I also want to point to the comment about changing the culture and awareness through music. I'm 62 years old. I promise you, I remember the 60s. I'm alive and well. And I have to tell you, there are songs that we sang back then that I'm immediately in tears when I hear them, or I'll stand up in my chair, because there was it was such a powerful way to find unity. You know, you could be anywhere in America and you could hear that song and you knew who you were and what you stood for. And I think it made a lot of the progress that we made in the 60s possible. And so I'm so in line with the idea that music is a great unifying factor, that the art of telling stories or sharing information out in poetry and song, it reaches beyond odds that we often walk around with and penetrates somewhere different. Our brain processes are differently, I think. And so, you know, we at the Coffee Party want to incite civility and reason, but wouldn't that be wonderful if that somehow touched your soul? And so I applaud you both for the work you're doing to have this happen. And so what would you see happening from this? I have tickets. I'm going to be there. I'm on the floor. And who am I going to be when I leave the event?
Oh, wow.
It's a very interesting question. And I think that one thing that is really important to note about and we're just talking about the Take Back Tour, because this is something that Panda's creation kind of we're really putting forth. But speaking about the Take Back Concert Tour, who are you going to be when you walk out? I think the point of this is not so much to tell people how to think, or tell people what they should become, or tell people who they should be, but to present the other side of the argument. Not so much to tell them what to think, but to get them to think. Most people who are going to be attending this, I mean, the activist community, yeah, they're going to be there, but the goal is not the activist community here. The goal, most of our efforts, we speak to the choir. We work with the choir. We work with people who are already politically active. We find that to be very effective. This is a little bit different. We're reaching out to people who really have not been engaged politically before. And the message that a lot of our speakers are bringing and a lot of our artists are bringing has been heavily censored by the mainstream media and heavily censored by any source that these people would usually go to for information, whether it's college courses, whether it's mainstream media outlets, whether it's workplace environment. And what we want to do is not so much make someone different, but to allow them an opportunity to think different. For once, you're going to get information now, and you're going to get a word and an idea that you may not have heard before. We hope that there's something you disagree with, because that means it's something that we're bringing to the forefront and something we're bringing to the debate. And I think the very fact of to answer your question in the easiest way I can, who are you going to be when you walk out? Someone who has now been let know the other side of the story. And whether or not you do anything with it is completely up to you, but you will at least know there is another side to the story. And most of the time, all it takes is knowing there's another side of the story before you start researching, looking into how this other side of the story works, and starting to determine for yourself, instead of having your thoughts controlled by people who want to control you.
Well, I love your answer, because, you know, I kept sketching as I was listening, and allow the opportunity to be exposed and engaged, allow the opportunity to be exposed. I think all of those things are good because I know that what we're going to find is all of these presets, you know, all the parameters that get handed out and hammered in are the things that keep us from peeking through to each other and sparking that thing we call American ingenuity. And we don't even know what's possible if we could actually spark together. And I think creative differences or, you know, respectful differences are a big part of that spark, you know, to see that maybe the first thing that came to mind isn't the solution. And, you know, again, I think music is a brilliant way to do this. So would you have the same answer to this question, Bobby?
Well, actually, pretty much. What I wanted to highlight while Dan was speaking was one of the differences between the events, which is important on how we're talking to the people, because there are two very, very important issues, and there are many issues being presented besides the two main ones, is Dan last year, the way that we got to where we are for Panda, Dan last year created a call essentially to educate the people, and what he decided to call it was the Take Back the Town campaign. And the idea behind it was similar to other ideas in other organizations, that everything is local. So he wanted to create a situation where he could help empower local people. So one of the things that he did was he found a coalition of groups was against the NDAA indefinite detention provisions and made them available to anybody who wanted to look into dealing with it at the local level. Then as an organization, the various state representatives were going after either with local town councils or county councils, county commissioners, to put before them resolutions into position to essentially nullify, and that's not the right word, but to, and Dan might be able to help me with the right word.
To interpose.
Thank you. That's what I was looking for, to interpose the NDAA, indefinite detention provision. So the successes started happening. Albany, New York was one. I was personally involved in that. Huge successes in other states, Idaho, Massachusetts, Nevada, by various people that were working on it. So we had legislation in front of people in Denver, and Dan wanted to use that and put together some kind of an event around the anniversary of the prisoners being put into Guantanamo Bay, January 11th. And it went from there. It steamrolled from there. I kind of got to thinking about the music, and, of course, Dan loves the music, and as soon as we talked about it, it became something that works within the campaign that he created. So what I was trying to do now and since then is to make sure that he's able to continue to get that aspect of the message out, and we want to talk to new people, of course. So that's why the music thing works, because you get to bring in their fans and we get to show them what's going on, and we plan on doing that in a big way.
Excellent. Dan, it sounded like you had something to add to that.
Yeah, I did, and I think the most succinct way to describe this is we work a lot with local groups, and we decentralize, and I can go into that later if you want, but we've decentralized to the point there where we really don't have chapters, we don't have teams. We work with a lot of local groups who cover other issues to cover this issue first, because we win and because it's such an important issue, and then use that momentum to kind of transfer to their other issues. Even working on the legislative end, and we work to, we're actually drafting up right now, a police policy that would go into the local police department that if any officer knowingly allows the laws of war under the NDAA to be used in that city or county, then that officer will be immediately fired from their job, or at least as close as we can get. Even then, they're all pieces of paper. And to me, it is much more important that we have something more than a piece of paper. And it really comes down to changing the culture, and really the best way to describe it, if we put out a press release today and it says that such and such a city banned the NDAA, within 2 weeks that press release has left the news cycle. Nobody sees it ever again. If an artist produces a song today and that song is about the NDAA and how we should never allow another Japanese-American internment to happen here on U.S. soil, and we should never allow the government the authority to utilize this power, that song gets heard for months and years. And as you pointed out, even 40-some-odd years later, you get a song that still has that message. And that's really, in my mind, that's the only way to really, truly stop the NDAA, is to change the underlying culture so that in our pop culture, in our arts, in our entertainment, that we all know that just as it's horrible to be racist, just as it's horrible to be against women's rights to vote, it is also absolutely awful for the government to have this authority, and we ingrain that in our pop culture. I think if we're able to do that, it will have much bigger effect than any piece of paper and any piece of legislation that could ever be passed.
Here, here, Dan. This is Debbie Lynn talking. I want to, you guys have done such a good job of setting up the why do we need to intersperse, you know, music and bring forth the young people and everything. Can you, and you have this tremendous lineup of speakers on May 10th. Can you kind of take us through, like, what's the flow of the day?
As far as the United We Stand Fest is, yeah. As far as the United We Stand Fest is concerned, Christina created a program that is extremely aggressive. Actually, it's still a work in progress, but essentially you're looking at a five-hour event that's going to start with music and end with music and have a number of speakers and discussions with groups of speakers, as well as multiple musicians all night long. As far as the one that, that as far as the Take Back Tour is concerned, it's going to be set up, well, again, music and speakers. We have some wonderful people like Shahid Buttar, who's the executive director of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, is going to be participating both as a speaker and a member of a roundtable that we've called Liberty in Peril, and also performing, because Shahid performs. We have, in the Albany event, for example, we have Immortal Technique performing. And if you don't know who he is or haven't heard his music or listened to an interview that he is in, you're missing something. He is a marvelous human being. He's actually performing at the United We Stand Fest as well, and he's performing for us. But if you listen to an interview with him about a multitude of subjects, it doesn't really matter. He's extremely educated. He's very well-spoken as far as knowledge of the issues are concerned, and he has a very strong opinion, one of which I can't find anything I disagree with yet, which I like, of course. You know how we all like that. And his music, and his music is a message. And the majority of the artists that we have, though Saving Abel, for example, a mainstream artist with a number of hit songs, they still, though, are socially conscious. Where they, you know, for example, they support our military really heavy when they're home. And, of course, one of the platforms that's in the events is anti-war. And then, of course, we also are supporting hemp, for example, and we are registered as part of the Hemp History Week, which happens in June, and we're one of the supporting events for that. And then the NSA, and all the events that we're doing with Panda are completely organic, concession and beverages in all ways. Two of them are outdoor arenas, two of them are indoor arenas. But we've taken over the concession to make it completely organic events as well, because we support, sustainable food, urban farming, and the marketplace, you know, removing GMOs from our society. So there's a number of ways that we're reaching out and how it's going to flow. But essentially, you're going to have music, you're going to have marvelous speakers. We are Skyping people in. As well, Jeffrey Smith, who created directed and produced the movie Genetic Roulette, he's going to be speaking at all our events, and he's going to be doing some of it live, some of it Skyped in. I mentioned some of the other people. We're going to be doing a marvelous roundtable on on the medical and food industries and how they're tied together. Health, actually, it's health and wellness and food. And I don't know the title of it yet because I haven't been smart enough to think of a good one. And but we have marvelous people doing doctors and urban farmers, and the only, in Georgia, for example, the only fully non-GMO supermarket, the Roswell Market in Georgia, is going to be participating as well. So that's kind of the way it's going to happen. It's going to be a lot of fun. The one in Georgia is going to be 6.5 hours long, and the one in Albany is going to be 8 hours long. We're going to put on a lot.
Wow. So there's probably a lot of, yeah, info, and that's a lot of organizing and opportunities for a lot of people to attend throughout the day.
So I have a question
Absolutely.
For both of you. I have a question for both of you, and maybe we'll start with Dan, three to agree. Basically, one of the mysteries, I think, of those of us who are engaged, politically engaged these days, is you know, how do we speak to or reach young people? And obviously, this through the arts and culture and entertainment is brilliant. But do you feel like the thing you're trying to get past is just that people are, like, going with the flow? Or do you think they're actually resigned and believe that it won't make any difference?
There's many ways to answer that question, but I think the most important point I can make, as far as reaching young people, I was speaking at a bar, actually, in Kalamazoo, Michigan, last week, and that's interesting, if you've ever spoken at a bar before.
No, I haven't.
But I was speaking there, and you had people come in and out. You had probably about 30 to 75 people there, 75 people at maximum, 30 at minimum. And I spoke for about an hour on the NDAA. And then I said, look, you know, we're going to have a chance to do, we've talked about the NDAA. We've talked about what. I want to talk about how. When we come back, we'll go in the back room. We'll talk about how. And said, you know, it'll be about 10 minutes. We'll be back there. Out of the 40-ish some odd people who were in the audience when I finished speaking, maybe 50, 20 people showed up to that advanced training. Which is kind of funny for me because I'm like, well, I just talked to you for an hour. You want to hear me talk to you more? But of those 20, 18 were under 30. And there are two important mistakes, at least in my mind, that I think people make when they're reaching out to young people. Understand that we are apathetic. Most of my generation is apathetic, not so much out of we don't care, but that anything we could possibly do wouldn't make a difference anyway, so there's no reason for us to do anything. And a lot of this is reinforced by the way D.C. just assumes that they live in a bubble and the rest of America doesn't exist. But I think there are two important mistakes that people make reaching out to young people. The first one, probably the most important, is I have heard the term, we need to get young people involved with this, and I'm so glad you're involved with this because you're young, more times than I could possibly remember. However, when people reach out to young folks, what they do is they say, well, yeah, we'd love you to get involved. We want you to go knock on doors for us. We want you to go hang signs. We want you to go. They'll never listen to any ideas that young people bring up because young people couldn't have any ideas. They're too young for that. But they want us as cannon fodder. And that is something that really scares a lot of young people away from political activity, is the minute they step in, they're told what to do. They're viewed as, well, you're inexperienced, so we're going to tell you to go do this, instead of being an integral part of whoever's asking them to get involved. And I think the second thing is the groups who want young people involved do not speak to young people in their language. Panda, from the very beginning, has put out YouTube videos. We have a very active YouTube channel with almost 120,000 views on it. We've put out very high quality, high tech videos and audios, and we focus to our message to a lot of, and it's not just a young movement, there's a lot of people involved with this. However, we speak to the young people in the way that they know. and that is audiovisual. They will not sit down and read an article. There's no reason to. You can get that exact same information from a picture, which takes 5 seconds, or a video, which takes a minute. So I think the two most important ways, at least in my opinion, to reach out to young people are, number one, ensure that they have a very strong voice in the direction of the movement or the direction of the goal that you're setting out. And secondly, speak to them in their language. And that's what this Take Back Concert Tour is all about, is speaking to them in their language. They're smart enough. We're not going to dumb anything down for the young people at this festival. There's no reason to. My generation's smart enough to understand, but no one speaks to them in a language they understand. When I go and speak to a political group and they ask me, well, what kind of projector do you want? I'm like, wait a minute, what kind of projector do I want? One that plugs into the computer. Oh, well, we have a slide projector too. And it's like, you're not exactly dragging my generation in.
But, you know, I have to tell you, being an old person, that being a part of the coffee party has made me young. I can't tell you the tech I didn't do before 2 years ago. but I think your point is well taken. I mean, especially in terms of, you know, if you're speaking to the Twitter world or whatever, I just know from personal experience that I put out a 12-word meme. Well thought, took days. But I put out a 12-word meme, and I get a million hits. I put out a really well thought out 2-paragraph post, and I get, you know, what I get. And it,
right.
I don't think that either the quality of either one was, they were probably pretty much the same. They're still for me. But the difference was how much time someone's going to take to actually read it. And the art of concise thinking and the concise expression shouldn't be something that we fear. I think we should revel in it and say, oh my gosh, just think of all that stuff I don't have to say. The qualifiers and the, you know.
So
blah,
I have a question here about this. When you're ready for me.
Oh, knock yourself out.
Yeah, and this will be for Dan, and you know, but Bobby, feel free. So once, you know, the quick, concise 5-second graphic, you know, gets somebody's attention, you know, that usually is like the surface level, like marketing maneuver on how to get people's attention. How do we actually get people involved and at the more complex level of actually doing the work, or getting, you know, sometimes things are complex, and you know, a 1-minute video or a 5-word phrase doesn't cut it. It's not the sum of it.
And the NDAA is particularly complex.
Right.
In fact, that with all of the battlefield elements, I mean, this combines law from the Geneva Conventions, this combines law from the Constitution, law from several different, the Military Commissions Act, 2001 authorization for use of military force. So this is ridiculously complicated. I cannot give a speech under 60 minutes and leave people with an understanding of the NDAA. But what we found is... the same way that advertisers reach out to customers, Edward Bernays, which is a name you guys probably know well, was a very famous, actually not very famous in the United States, but he was the nephew of Sigmund Freud and war propagandist.
Right.
He practically invented public relations, the press release, his idea, press conference, his idea, and reinvented advertising to focus on emotion rather than facts, which... as sad as that is, he's done that, and the American people are used to it. So what we'll do, for example, is we'll create a video that is 3 minutes long that gives a little bit of information about the NDAA, but mostly focuses on reaching out to them as a human being. And then we'll have a link where they can learn more. And that link has all the backup documents. We have so many pages of legal documents on the website, you can't shake a stick at them. But most people are not going to be pulled in, as you said, by a 2-paragraph, 3-paragraph post. So we'll post something quick, and then we'll put a little link. And here's where you can learn more, or here's where you can do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
And what that does as well is it filters people. Some people only want to read that 5-second paragraph or 5-second meme. They don't want to do the work. And you'll pull your hair out trying to get them to do the work. That's why we that's one of the reasons we decentralize. We're not pushing people anymore. They asked for our help. But in that filtering process, you do allow people as much as you can to reach that next level and actually get seriously active.
Ding, ding, ding. That's exactly true. It's something that I've experienced in my own life, which is this. Every time someone clicks a like and every time somebody clicks a link that's attached, they're one step closer to something. And so I think what you have to surrender when you do this is to say, if I've taken somebody one step closer to understanding why the vote is important, or if I've taken people one step closer to understanding how civil rights affects them, you know, all, or one step closer to grasping the nuances of the NDAA, then I have to give up the idea that I'm, A, getting any credit for that, or B, even Coffee Party will get any credit for that, because what we're trying to do is sort of, it's kind of like move the tide, change the tide. And so I think I am sure that while you're making amazing progress in NDAA, you're making amazing progress in moving people towards engagement, you know, and taking charge of their circumstances as it relates to, you know, this republic's democracy. And I think that it's good work. It's good work to be doing.
Really, on that note, it really puts the emphasis on the people. And when you put the emphasis on the people, and you, it's the difference between, hey, you can clock in and I will watch over you and make sure you do your job, and then when you clock out, you just go wild. And, hey, I'm not going to watch over you. I'm not going to do your job. I'm going to tell you why it needs to be done. And whenever you want, we're here to help. And I'll touch base with you, say, see how you're doing at the beginning to help get you going. But at that point, it's you. And that approach has really revolutionized things for us because, and it can, I highly recommend any organizations who decentralizing is not popular. It's not popular for one reason. Two reasons. Number one, you don't get the credit for most of the stuff you do. Number two, you have very little control over what people do. And people don't want to give up their credit and control. But I would guarantee you, for anybody, any organization leader who's listening to this, that if you decentralize your organization, you get rid of your chapters, you get rid of your teams, you remove the hierarchical structure of a top-down so that they have to go ask you to use your logo, and they have to go ask you to use this, and they have to go, you might get misrepresented. You might get, somebody might take your credit and steal your thunder. But the mission that you put forth and that you set forth to do, since people are self-directed, they're committing to a cause, and they have the chance to master it as long as you're given the resources and the help. You have those three elements that psychologists say motivate people. And once you back away and you say, all right, we're helping, we're not leading, you're not joining us, we're helping you, you will flip the mindset and you will increase your action like we have hundreds of percent. I can't tell you what that has done to the organization, where we stopped being a little miniature government and we started allowing these people to act in the way that they wanted to act.
Bravo.
Yeah, you know,
Bravo. Go ahead, Bobby.
Yeah, and to add a little bit to answer Debbie Lynn's question as well, I would highlight one of the things that Dan said earlier about talking to the youth the way they need, you know, the way they want to be talked to and need to be talked to by other generations like mine. And, you know, that has a lot to do with keeping people engaged as well, because as you were mentioning, when you give them the soundbite and the marketing aspect of it, if they ask you a question and you answer it the right way and not not in some condescending or, you know, yeah, we want to have you go post signs, for example, you're going to keep them engaged, and you know they're going to find their own way. I thought what Dan did was brilliant, and he's so right about how successful it's been. We are seeing it every day, the successes that we're hearing about for the issue, because PANDA ultimately is a single issue organization. It will work with anybody who also sees the indefinite detention and this law the way we do, and we also have our own personal positions, but PANDA is a single issue organization, and it is wonderful to see it successful. And it speaks a lot about him. I have no problem praising him when it comes to the fact that you can tell by there's no ego here. He wants the mission to succeed, and that's how he's been able to get it to be done and get out of the way and let them do it themselves. And it was brilliant, absolutely.
But I couldn't agree with both of you more. I feel strongly that it's more about creating the climate, the community, the culture, than it is the thing, you know, PANDA did this or Coffee Party did this or, you know, we just fall into the trap of what it is we're trying to transcend when we do that. And so it's very important to me not only to empower others to do it and to create a presumption of no bias. In other words, I think we're all looking to being able to disseminate information in a way that it transcends talking points and biases and whatever, and we're really trying to get facts available to people in such a way that they might engage with them. But I think the other piece is that we really, really need to be the culture we seek. You know, so it is ironic to me that we'll get these tightened up, battened down activist organizations, you know, that you get marching orders from, when indeed that's not what we want to have happen.
No, not at all.
So why would we do it that way? You know, and it's a struggle. It is a struggle. People go to where what they know, and so I keep going into what I don't know, going into what I don't know, and pretty soon I'll actually be standing someplace I really wanted to be, and the journey is amazing. And being with folks like you to take that journey just makes it all the better. So, are there any words of wisdom, event pitches, things that came to mind that you wanted to say but you didn't know where they fit in this conversation? I'd love to hear.
Well, for me, I want to ask people to go to the websites first about the events, takebacktour.com, freeandequal.org, unitedwestandfest.com, and then, of course, pandaunite.org. The Take Back Tour tickets for the May event are on sale at Ticketmaster as well. It's on May 25th, which is the day after the March Against Monsanto, and that was done on purpose because I'm bringing in the organic food and I'm bringing in a lot of the March people here in Atlanta for that event, which I'm in Atlanta, for those who don't know. And as far as the NDAA is concerned, I offer this quickly, and I'll let Dan follow up. When the law was put into effect, the vote in the Senate, for example, was 93-7. So when you run to your safe areas when it comes to the elected officials you may or may not support, you know, for me, it's all about the voting record anyway. But remember that this is not an issue of partisan. No issue is in my mind. It's what's right for the people. And our government doesn't care. And to me, this law, what this law did was it gave permission for our government to be capricious, because essentially there's no check and balance in any way, shape, or form. And they essentially have taken the Constitution and says, okay, well, this protection is gone, this protection is gone, this protection is gone. And for the life of me, I don't know where they think they got the authority for it, but we're the ones that are going to pay. And Martin Luther King was considered a terrorist by J. Edgar Hoover. We know that as a fact. If this law would have been in effect in those years, Martin Luther King could have been indefinitely detained with no charges, no lawyer, et cetera. And just think about what would have happened there. And that sums it up for me.
Wow,
you know,
brilliant. And any last words for you, Dan?
Yeah, I have to echo what Bobby talked about. You know, Martin Luther King Jr., we know he was spied on by the FBI. We know
yes.
that they attempted to murder him. Whether or not that the successful murder was their fault or not, we know that there's been attempts. We know that they used COINTELPRO against him. We know that they considered him an enemy of the state. And you have a culture in America right now, it's changing. But right now it sits at considering anyone who challenges governmental authority as enemy of the state, and they've simplified the term down to the word terrorist. Just today, Louisiana is creating a database of residents who may be, quote, a risk to the state. That's from Inquisitor. And you have this idea that now anyone who challenges government authority should be stripped of their right to a trial, should be stripped of their right to a jury. A perfect example of this broadening of the term terrorist, which is an interesting term in itself, because how have tyrannical governments throughout history ruled their people? Fear.
Mm-hmm.
So
sure.
If terrorist and fear of terror and the war on terror is telling us anything, it's telling us our politicians are ruling us by fear. But that aside, the assistant advisor of Homeland Security to the president went on PBS NewsHour a couple days ago and was talking about who are the next terrorists and needing the community's help to identify the next terrorists. And she said that confrontational children have a possibility of being the next terrorist. They're a warning sign. And that, in my mind, sums up what this is really all about. This is about the government putting a category, and this is the message I want to leave with your listeners. When the government or any powerful entity creates a category of persons that they say does not have rights, I don't care what you think about the Bundy Ranch situation. Panda doesn't take a position on it. But when Senator Harry Reid called those people, not only the Bundys, but the supporters of the Bundys, domestic terrorists, and several people on social media argued that, well, this would be one time where we could use a drone strike. May I remind you, the rights you accord to your enemy are the only rights you will receive and the only rights you hold. Do not let any entity, whether they call them terrorists, whether they call them child molesters, whether they call them domestic enemies, never allow a government or a powerful entity to say, this group of people doesn't have rights. They did it to the Japanese Americans in World War II. They said, they're saboteurs. They're all out to get you. This group of people doesn't have rights. They're doing it with the Amber Alert. This group of people doesn't have rights. They're doing it with the term terrorist. Guantanamo Bay, this group of people doesn't have rights. When you allow a powerful entity to say this group of people does not have rights, all it takes is them to redefine that group of people to include you, and all of a sudden you are not considered to have rights. And that is the most dangerous thing we allow our government and our corporations and our powerful entities to do, is say this group of people are not human. And the minute we allow them to do that, they apply it to us and they use it to crush dissent. And that is the message I want to leave with your listeners. Do not allow them to do that to America.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I have to tell you, a few years ago, I went to the Rally to Restore Sanity in Washington, D.C., and I got there early, had to time adjust, being from the West Coast, and so I spent the day before the rally in the Holocaust Museum, and I spent the greater part of that day in the propaganda exhibit, and they outlined so clearly, Dan, what you just said, the process that they went through to take decent people and move them to horrific behavior. And this was a lot of what you just said were the steps. You know, why was it okay to terminate the mentally ill? Why was it okay to terminate or exclude non-Jews, or I mean non-Germans? Why was it okay to, you know, it just evolved. And so when you said, once you can define a group as not human, you can redefine the next group and redefine the next group. And so I think there's such brilliance in what you had to say. I'm really moved. And when you said that confrontational children, who among us was not?
Those weren't my words. Those are the assistant advisor to Homeland Security.
But and, right. And the thing is that we used to call them bullies.
I know I was an ADD candidate myself. I know that. If I was in grammar school today, they'd have me so drugged up, it'd be ridiculous.
I was not a bully, but I was precocious, and I was, you know, I stopped growing when I was 11. So I was tall, I was athletic, and I questioned everything. I can't imagine how that would work for me today. So,
yeah, my report card came back and said that I was, I needed to let other people have their own opinion.
They couldn't shut me up for 8 years in grammar school. They couldn't figure out a way to shut me up, and they couldn't do anything about it because I was an A-plus student, so I gave them nowhere to go. The teachers used to call on my name trying to trick me and get me in trouble, and I know the damn answer. I was so arrogant. And I would know the answer. He knows the answer. Now what are we going to do? And then I would turn around and continue the conversation. I drove them crazy. And I went back to my grammar school when I was in my 20s, and I went to a Catholic grammar school, and I saw my principal, and that's exactly what she told me. So I've always remembered that.
Well, you know, I've got to let you guys go here shortly because I have a radio show coming up. But my dad sat me down over Easter. I spent Easter with my family. And he explained to me for the first time why I was homeschooled. And he said that it was because I could see you would never sit down. You were always running around. Your idea of quiet study was running around the room, banging pots and pans. And he said, I knew they would drug you up. And that's why we didn't send you there. So I am forever grateful for my parents for, even though I disagree with some of the things they taught me, for allowing me to have an open mind.
Well, I am forever grateful they did that too, Dan. And I'm grateful that you spent our hour with us today. Bobby Rodrigo, thank you very much for your time. I have a couple of closing comments, which are these. Coffee Party USA is a totally crowdfunded organization. Citizens United has not benefited us. To become a voting member or to donate, go to www.coffeepartyusa.com. Blog Talk Radio shows happen 4 times a week for Coffee Party USA, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, Progressive Politics Tennessee Style with Bud Fields, Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern, Press 1 for Democracy with Dan Aronson, Thursdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, Here You Are, Lunch with Loudon, and Saturdays, 1 p.m. Eastern, Politics Right, done with Egberto Willis. It's been a wonderful hour. It's been a fast hour. And I want to thank you all for spending that hour with us. Coffee Party on.
1, 2, 3. You got to make the morning last, just kicking down.